Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to our second hour of our Wednesday show here at Catholic Answers Live. This hour we're joined by Trent Horn. Trent is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, a writer and speaker extraordinaire, a man who has been long involved in the pro-life movement, long involved in Catholic apologetics. And today he wants to share with you some practical ideas for apologetics. If you have practical questions about how to do apologetics, how to be properly prepared to do apologetics, and get some tricks and tips. I guess not tricks, maybe. We're not trying to trick anybody, but some ideas from Trent Horn. First of all, hi, Trent.
Hello, Cy. Maybe we could call them hacks.
Hacks? Oh, that's the new thing. Everybody's hacking everything.
I have all these life hacks, you know, ahead with doing something.
I know life hacks are like, here's an idea. Put cereal in a bowl and put milk on it. Life hack. Is that right?
I think it's more like, you know, brush your teeth while you're taking your shower saves you 15 seconds or I don't know. But then a lot of the life hacks when it comes to like try to make things easier, it's just like, actually, this is a lot more of a convoluted way of doing it.
I can't multitask. Right. So if any of the life hacks involve multitasking, they're not for me.
That's
so.
Right. Now, what I was hoping to talk about today is just for anyone to call in as an interest just in the field of apologetics itself, explaining and defending the faith, questions about how to do that, how to get better at it, different questions, different aspects of apologetics, just to talk about kind of a free and open forum to talk about a lot of these more interesting things and you know, see where the conversation goes.
All right. Hey, I was about to give out the number, but I'm going to quit. Do you know the number here? Would you be able to give out the number if I said, Trent, give out the phone number?
Sure. Let me. 8?
Yep, it starts with an 8. Yep. Okay, you're doing great.
8.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Finger.
No, come on.
Smile. They're trying to tell me in the control room what it is.
They're using their fingers to show you the numbers.
888.
Yes.
31T-RUTH.
No. Not 31T-RUTH.
Yeah, it's 31T-RUTH.
Well, it is in a way 31T-RUTH. But it's 31 truth. 888-31-TRUTH.
I thought we were okay. If that's what you say. All right. 888-31-TRUTH.
Yes, not 31T-RUTH.
My gosh,
you did a fine job. It's almost like you work here, Trent.
It's almost like I do. I think I did just half of what you do now. Now, once I can get everything else. I could either do your job, or we could get one of those ducks that drinks the water automatically.
Yeah, but you just sit in my seat.
And it sits there and it pushes the key.
That is way more than half of what I do, first of all. That's all
the bird that
giving
hits it.
Giving the number, yes. And second of all, I don't think you are one to talk about ducks, because I have heard a story about you and a duck that, do you know what I'm talking about?
Possibly.
That you were riding a bike.
That's on him. That was on him.
That was on
him. Yeah,
You're blaming the duck. This is my favorite part about this story. You blame the duck whenever this story comes up.
I think ducks need to take responsibility for their own actions. I was talking about the problem of evil and suffering, and especially the problem of animal suffering, and showing the caller who was discussing the problem, why do animals suffer? I've had heartfelt experiences when I was just enjoying a recreational bike ride here, locally here in San Diego, California, just minding my own business, when this duck rushed in front of me, charged at me, feared for my life, and tried to avoid the situation, and ran right over the guy. But
how he says that on the down low, ran right over the guy. Like, you attacked a duck with your bike, is what happened.
It was more, you could argue it was self-defense, but the point is, he did not die, at least at that moment. He wobbled away and swam away a bit crooked.
Right.
But in any case, I don't even know where we're going now. I don't even know what happened here.
I don't know what happened here either.
We're going in a kilter direction, much like that duck that swam away. So, we're talking about apologetics, how to defend the faith.
Well, we were saying if you could give out the number is where this all started.
Yes, that's right. If I, and we don't have to get the little... the little ducky. People got to remember that. It was, you filled it with water and it would go and it would take a little drink.
Yeah, people remember it.
Yeah.
You don't have to keep saying it. Well, people remember it.
Not everyone who listens to our show remembers that. So I'm sure a lot of people here listening to the show don't know what a cassette tape is.
That's probably true.
Yeah. So
yeah. I'm just kind of testing you to see how you would do as host. I mean, I'm just kind of going to feel that out, see how you did put on the spot and all that. You really did a fine job.
Oh, thank
have
you.
Have you ever heard about Jimmy Carter and the Rabbit? Do you know the story about Jimmy? No, seriously, do you know the story of Jimmy Carter and the Rabbit?
I do not know the story of Jimmy
Google
Carter
it sometime.
And the
it's
Rabbit.
Almost exactly the same story as you and a duck. Oh. It's almost exactly the same story. 888. Do any of you know it? 888-318-7884.
Everyone in there's like, who's
Jimmy Carter?
I know they
was
were all
was he
born.
One of the Backstreet Boys?
That was James Carter in the Backstreet Boys. 888-318-7884, our number, 888-31-TRUTH. I can say the number better than Trent, but I can't answer the questions better than Trent. So you ready to go to calls, Trent?
We can do that.
All right, let's start with Vito in Washington, watching on YouTube. Thank you for putting up with us for a moment. Vito, your question for Trent Horn.
Hi, good afternoon and evening, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my question. My question is, how do you strike a balance between winning an argument and winning the other person? As in, you know, Jesus asks us to win the hearts of other people.
Sure. I think that's a good question, Vito. And I would appeal to what St. Paul writes in his letter to the Colossians. He says that we should speak to everyone. Our speech should be seasoned with salt so that you may answer everyone according to the words that they need to hear. So I think that the balance really comes in watching people and reading them when we're having conversations with them, because it's not exclusive. It's not like, well, I can choose to win over this person's heart or I can choose to win the argument. We can do both. That to be charitable to another person is we should lead them to the truth. But we also have to understand that people have a hard time changing their mind, that there's something called the backfire effect, that when you show somebody that they're wrong, they're more likely to push back against you and double down on what they believe. This has been studied time and time again. It's called the backfire effect. So just simply explaining somebody that they're wrong, they'll get defensive. So to reach someone's heart and win the argument, what I try to do is just ask questions to get them thinking about the issue. That way, the argument, it's not me. I put down an awesome argument, crushed them, and I'm going to try to get their heart afterwards. It's more, I care about their heart. I'm having a good conversation with them. And I ask them, you know, look, what do you think about this? Or how would you explain this? And if I see the person's getting tense or uncomfortable, I try to just say, you know, it's just something to think about if you want to. And if you want to get back to me on it, that's fine. If you read the person, you can see how much longer they want to be in a conversation or not. And then when you can tell that they're not that into it, you just try to leave them with a little breadcrumb, something to think about. And then that will win over the argument for them. Maybe later on down the line, you've reached their heart. You've shown that you care about them. You're listening to them. And then you give them something else to think about down the line. So I think that's a good pattern that we can go through in our conversations. But one thing we have to practice is kind of funny. We don't just need to have the right arguments. That's important. A lot of times we have to really learn how to engage people in conversations. That people vary on a spectrum of how good they are, I think, at reading other people. Like some people, on the extreme end of the spectrum side, there's some people that just cannot read emotions in other people's faces.
Yeah.
At the most extreme end would be someone who has face blindness. So this would be somebody who can't even recognize faces.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell that. They can only recognize like clothing. And then on the other end, there are people who can tell like if other people are lying based on micro expressions in their face. Like that TV show Lie to Me, that was a plot, major plot point in that show. So the more we can do that when we're in a conversation with someone to see how they're expressing themselves, even through nonverbal body language. I mean, if I'm talking to them and I'm putting forward good points and they're leaning away, they're crossing their arms, they're looking at the watch or their cell phone, again, they're squirming a bit. You don't want to put someone's feet to the fire. Then they don't want to listen. They just want to get out of there. Just give them enough to think about. Then when you see they're ready to go, gently let them go, but always leave the door open for a future conversation. So a bit of a long answer, Vito, but is that a helpful answer?
Very helpful. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you for starting us off this hour, Vito. Appreciate it. Practical ideas for evangelizations with Trent Horn this hour. I mentioned this last hour, but Trent's The Case Against Contraception DVD is available at shop.catholic.com, and it's one of the contraception items there that we're charging no shipping on, free shipping all this weekend. If you want to get that, you will enjoy it. 888-318-7884 is our number. And also, we want to I want to remind you, we're going to give you a free MP3. An MP3 sound file, Confronting Contraception. I believe you had something to do with that as well, Trent Horn.
I did. That was an interview for my Chastity Collection with Damon Owens. We had a great interview talking about what the church teaches about contraception, why it's wrong, and how to explain that to other people. It's a great hour-long interview to learn about the subject, especially discussing the issue of Humana Vitae. I know you covered that here in the last hour with Dr. Smith. And so if you want to learn more about it, in a great back and forth I had with Damon Owens, who travels all around the country teaching people about contraception and natural family planning, I highly recommend it.
And the way you get it, you just go to Catholic.com. There's a banner there. You click the banner, you get a free MP3. That's it. Go to Catholic.com and get your free MP3 today.
Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I've got a few things here and there that I've learned along the way. I'm always studying history, and I love studying history. So I try to bring in some of the historical perspective, especially at a time in our history when people don't know much history anymore.
Open Line with Father Mitch Pacwa, tonight, 10 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We are talking with apologist Trent Horn about apologetics today. If you want some ideas, on some practical tips on sharing the news about the Catholic Church and giving people correct, proper understandings of what we as Catholics believe and do, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Well, before we go to a call, aren't you impressed with how I said that phone number?
I don't think I could do it with as much aplomb as you.
Oh, aplomb.
Aplomb.
Oh, yeah. Wow. All right. Lauren in Atlanta, you are up next with Trent Horn. Your question, please, Lauren.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Lauren.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I hope this is a timely question. It's funny I hear you tonight saying this. I bumped into a veterinarian last week. He does community service work. It's kind of a Christian outreach. And as part of the application, as you were filling out the paperwork, at the very bottom of the page, it says, how do you see yourself with God? And I wrote down an appropriate answer. And as he was taking care of my dog, he was asking me how I, you know, what was my faith life like.
Lauren, I want to interject real fast. I'm trying to understand. So you went to a veterinarian practice, and on the form it had this question about your relationship with God?
Yes.
I wonder what their view on the movie All Dogs Go to Heaven is. I don't go to the vet very often anyways, because, well, I have human doctors I can go to and I don't have any animals, but I do find that very interesting a vet would ask that. So I just wanted to make clear for everyone.
The reason why is it is a low income, charitable outreach.
Okay.
So that it was because I didn't have a lot of money to spend for my dog who was dying.
Mm-hmm.
I found them through another practice.
Okay.
So in a van in a church parking lot on a Saturday afternoon, I drove over to this man's van.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So I didn't have a strong objection to that.
Sure, of course.
However, it was interesting as we were dialoguing, and I jokingly answered that I am a born again Catholic.
Very good.
And I only say that because being in the South, sometimes people, you know, they have an expectation of Catholics, and I'm very active in my faith.
Good.
So it was interesting that he was saying to me, I get lots of Catholics in here, and I always just ask them, if they were to die today, would they know for sure that they were going to heaven? So again, I know that that's a very common question that's asked of Catholics.
Sure.
And a lot of times Catholics don't know how to answer. And he said, you know, most of them just say to me, I don't know. I would hope I would go to heaven, but I can't be sure. And
yeah.
So then again, we had that hook. I wasn't going to take the bait. So I just we talked about God a little bit, and
yeah.
He knew I was strong in my faith. And at the end of the visit, he handed me his business card and a 2-page typed letter, basically talking about his faith life and his faith beliefs. And
right.
In the bottom of the letter, it said, I would love to dialogue with you about God if you would like.
Okay.
You know, contact me through this email address.
Sure.
So for the last week, I thought, you know, I really would like to write him a letter. But I really, you know, would like to know again.
Yeah.
It was obvious that he had a very anti-Catholic bias.
Sure.
I wanted to share with him some of the beauty of what the Catholic Church teaches. I had been away from the Catholic Church many years,
yeah.
Told him that, came back, and I'm in love with the Catholic Church. And I think he looked at me like I was an idiot. But my point is that I would love to have some good, solid Bible references to be able to write back, just to say,
right.
Take a look at this. I have some great books. I know some of the great authors. And,
sure.
But I just thought, you know, I'd like to respond to this man.
Fair enough, Lauren. Let's let Trent respond.
Well, we can do that, Lauren. And I think a lot of Catholics feel stumped by this question when people ask, how do you know you're going to heaven? Or if you died today, would you go to heaven? And many of us want to instinctively say we feel almost cornered a little. On the one hand, we don't want to sound presumptuous to say, you bet I'm definitely going there. That seems to have almost like a kind of presumption, like, I know I'm going because of all these things that I've done, when salvation is a gift from God. So we don't want to be presumptuous, but at the same time, we don't want to say, well, I'm not going to heaven because I've been faithfully following what the church teaches. And I'm in a state of grace. So how should we respond without looking like we don't believe in salvation or without being presumptuous? I think something that you can, Lauren, you can say and others can say when you're asked that question, you know, by a Protestant friend, if you died today, would you go to heaven? The answer I would give would be this. I'm confident I would go to heaven, but I do not have false assurance. Because I would then move it back, so I'd say I'm confident, but I don't have a false assurance, like something that's 100%, but I have confidence. How do I know I have confidence? Well, a person will go to heaven if they die in God's friendship, if they are a baptized child of God, and they are not in a state of mortal sin. And so you may have to be purified along the way by going to purgatory, but you can say, well, I have confidence, or what we call moral certainty. To say, I can examine my soul at this moment, and I'm not guilty of a mortal sin. So I would have confidence that I would go to heaven. I might have to be purified of sin along the way, but I can examine my conscience right now. And you could turn that back to the Protestant, because even Protestants who believe that they will definitely go to heaven, there's Protestants who believe in eternal security, once saved, always saved. They'll say, yeah, once you're saved, you'll definitely go to heaven. You can ask them, how do you know you were saved at one point? So it's kind of the flip there, because what many Protestants will say, Cy, is that if somebody claims they were saved, then falls away later, they'll say, well, that person was never saved in the first place. So, Lauren, you could ask your veterinarian friend, you know, you can ask him, how are you going to go to heaven? He says, yeah, absolutely, because I believe in Jesus. So you can ask him, well, how do you know that you were saved in the past? And he would say, well, he has moral certainty. He really did believe at some point. So that moral certainty about him being saved in the past, you can say, well, I have that same certainty that I am in God's grace and in his friendship right now in this moment. Something else, Lauren, I think is helpful. I'm not going to rattle off a bunch of Bible verses to you, maybe just a few that I find to be helpful. Instead, I will send you a copy of my book, Why We're Catholic, because it has a whole chapter on salvation in there for you to read and present. But I think what's important in a conversation with a gentleman like this is to talk about salvation in a larger pattern or structure. Because a lot of Protestants view salvation as kind of a judicial decree that I'm a sinner, I believe in Jesus, God is the judge, he bangs the gavel, not guilty, going to heaven because of that verdict God gave in the past. And some of them will say nothing could ever overturn that verdict. Some of them will say, yeah, if you leave the faith later, it's overturned. But some will say, no, the judge says you're not guilty, you're going to heaven, even if it happened, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. Catholics, however, Lauren, don't view salvation in a legal context. God is not the judge who says not guilty. We view salvation in a familial context. Salvation is about once we were isolated and away from God's family because of original sin. When we were baptized, we entered God's family as adopted sons and daughters of God. And we will be a part of that family forever, provided we don't abandon the family, provided we don't reject God through mortal sin and reject the grace that he's given us into our souls. So a good parallel to that would be the parable of the prodigal son, to say that even if we ever did that, if we ever abandon God, God won't abandon us. He always waits there for us to return to him through the sacrament of confession, just the same as the father in the parable of the prodigal son waited for the prodigal son to return to him. And so just to say that salvation as a Catholic is a process. I was saved or born again when I was baptized. That's when I entered God's family. And salvation is a process. In 1 Corinthians 15, St. Paul talks about how we are being saved. He uses the present tense there. And so as we're being saved, in Philippians 2:12 says we work out our salvation in fear and trembling. That's we live out our life obeying God's laws he's given us as his sons, adopted sons and daughters. Then finally, salvation's a future element. Romans 13:11 says salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. So that talks about salvation being a future reality when we are fully reunited with the family of God and freed from sin in this life, provided we die in God's friendship and we die and have not abandoned the family that we now belong to. So I think if you look at it and talk about salvation as this familial context, adopted through baptism, obeying God, not committing mortal sin, and if we do, reconciling with him through confession, and then dying in God's grace and friendship and going to heaven, he can see that actually Protestants believe something very similar, that they were saved at some point in the past, and saved people don't commit these really serious sins. And if they do, they'd seek God's forgiveness. So you can show there's kind of similarities there. But check out the chapter that we, in my book, Why We're Catholic, that's the chapter is called Why We Believe in Faith Working Through Love. And that kind of lays out the whole issue of salvation there in another way that I just did on the show. So stay on the line and let's get that to you. But before I let you go, is that a helpful explanation? Do you have any other questions?
That was fabulous, fabulous. I wanted to include in my letter the beauty of the sacrament of reconciliation. So and how confessing to one person, even in the Protestant faith, they understand that when they're verbalizing what they've done, there is a sense of relief and release that I think I've had success with Protestant people seeing that an aha moment.
Sure.
In relationship to the Catholic Church's belief in reconciliation. So I think that the familial connection that you made is perfect.
That's good.
Perfect. Thank you.
And I would point out, so to continue that familial explanation, when people say, well, Jesus died on the cross and he forgave my past, present, and future sins, some people think, well, I don't have to confess anymore because Jesus died and all of my sins are forgiven. Now, it's true, when we're baptized, all of our past sins are forgiven. But we can still commit new sins as adopted sons and daughters of God. We can throw away our inheritance we would receive. The inheritance is an image that St. Paul uses frequently in his letters to describe our salvation. And you can reject an inheritance. You can choose to not collect an inheritance. So that's an idea there that we can still do things to reject our relationship with our adopted family and God. So if somebody says, well, Jesus died for all my sins, I don't have to confess, I would point out, well, if that's the case, why does Jesus say in the Our Father that he tells us this is how we are to pray, as in keep saying this prayer, forgive us our trespasses? If this is the prayer we're always supposed to pray, Jesus says pray like this, why do we keep asking God to forgive us our sins if they're have already been forgiven? It doesn't make sense that if we rupture or destroy our relationship with God after we've been adopted into his family, after we've begun the process of salvation, we need a means to reconcile to him. And the sacrament of confession gives us that means to do that. You can also point out, when, you know, talking about confession, well, I just confess my sins to Jesus. A fun thing to ask a Protestant friend is, where does the Bible say to confess our sins to Jesus, to the risen Jesus? It actually doesn't. Now, in 1 John 1:9, St. John says, if we confess our sins, he is merciful and he will forgive us. But in that context of 1 John 1:9 in verses 8 through 10, the context, if you look in 1 John chapter 1, John's actually talking about confessing things to other people. The word confession there is actually always used in the context, or almost always used in the context of verbally confessing to other people. Mm-hmm. Like he talks about in 1 John about if we, you know, confess certain things to our brothers and sisters that are false, we are a liar, for example. Rather, confessing sins explicitly in Scripture is only described in one place, James 5:16, in the context of the priests or presbyters and confessing sins to other people.
Lauren, do hang on so that Thomas can get your address. We'll send you Why We Are Catholic. Trent Horn is our guest this hour with practical tips for apologetics. We'll be right back with more of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
Can we really say the Bible is inerrant when it seems to contain so many internal contradictions about allegedly factual events? What are the two basic interpretation problems we encounter when we read the Bible? How can we deal with difficulties arising from translation differences, copyist errors, and varying literary genres? 20 Answers Bible Difficulties gives you the tools to recognize and reconcile common kinds of Bible difficulties and addresses the specific ones that most often embolden skeptics and dismay believers. 20 Answers Bible Difficulties is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting series from Catholic Answers Press.
In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it is outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teaching, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent put forward a compelling case for Catholic teaching with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers YouTube channel. New subscribers welcome.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. There are a lot of misconceptions about the Catholic faith. We clear them up on Call to Communion, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Pillett, your host. Trent Horn, our guest this hour, sharing practical ideas, practical tips for apologetics. And our number, 888-318-7884, if you'd like to talk with Trent. And Trent, just to clarify, I probably should have done this right at the top. Apologetics, what are we even talking about when we say apologetics?
Apologetics is a branch of theology dedicated to the rational defense of the Christian faith. We're not apologizing for anything.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right, oh. Exactly. And we're also not making people sorry they asked why we're Catholic. another error.
Sometimes we are.
Right, and we don't want to do that.
Unintentionally.
No, yeah, so apologetics comes from the Greek word apologia, which means to give a reason or defense for a hope within. So apologia, usually in the ancient world, referred to a defense you might give in a court of law. So in Plato's work, Apology, it talks about the defense Socrates gave to the Athenian tribunal that brought him up on charges of corrupting the youth, introducing strange gods. Socrates was a great philosopher, but he was a very bad lawyer, so he still ended up getting executed. But that might have part of been his point anyways.
He wasn't really trying. He wasn't really trying.
Yeah, they said, what should the punishment be? And he said, well, you guys should just give me free room and board for the rest of my life to continue doing what I'm doing. And that didn't quite go over well with everybody.
No.
And though his students offered to rescue him and to actually save him from this punishment, and he declined and gave his reasons for doing that. So apologetics, apologia, to give a reasoned defense for what we believe. And so what we want to talk about today is how to get better at doing that, basically, how to become a better apologist.
And that's what we're doing this hour, 888-318-7884. The number, we go now to Matt in Bowling Green, Ohio, listening on Annunciation Radio. Matt, you are on with Trent Horn. Your question. No Matt? We don't have a Matt there. All right. Well, I'll come back to that line, see if Matt comes back. We'll go to Basil in Houston, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Basil, you're on with Trent Horn. Your question, please.
Hey, Si, it's Basil again from Houston. How are you?
Wait, did I do this before? I've done this.
I don't know if you remember me. I came like 3 weeks ago. You met me like 3 weeks ago. I don't know if you remember me.
And did I call you Basil at the time, and it's appropriately Basil?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I apologize
that's
for
Basil,
that.
But that's okay.
Well, you're a very spicy guy, Basil. Your question for Trent Horn.
Si, we don't have a lot of time for this, T-H-Y-N-E.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. Okay, my question is,
you know, I get
a little intimidated. I want to learn more about apologetics,
sure.
But I get intimidated when I hear Trent or Jimmy Akin talk about it sometimes. So what's a good book to start at if I want to get good at apologetics?
That's good. And actually, Basil, I will say that you have common ground with me because I get incredibly intimidated when I hear Jimmy Akin talk about apologetics. I sometimes think that Jimmy is actually a robot that the church sent from the year 2067 back to this point in time to be able to make sure the church continues on a correct course, because I don't know how it's humanly possible to know as much as he does. And much like my colleagues as well, Tim Staples. I mean, it seems like the guy's got the entire Bible and catechism memorized. And when you hear people like that, you think, well, I can't do that, but that's okay. You can do what God is calling you to do. As I have to say on the radio, it's been said that God does not call the equipped. He equips the called. And so just start small and just learn about your faith, Basil. Anyone listening, how do I start doing this? I mean, how do I start when it seems like there's so much to learn? This would be my practical tips. Number one, I would say become familiar with the New Testament and the Catechism of the Catholic Church. You will become an amazing defender of the Catholic faith if you read one chapter of the New Testament each night. Do a reading plan, Monday through Friday. Just read one chapter of the New Testament and 10 paragraphs in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. If you do that in a year, you will have read the entire New Testament, and you will read the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Bonus points, if you're for the New Testament, you read something like the Ignatius Catholic Study Bible. So you'll read the New Testament and then read the little notes underneath. But at the bare minimum, just read the New Testament and then read the Catechism of the Catholic Church. The Catechism actually has very good apologetic notes in it. In the Catechism, you'll see some of the paragraphs are written in very small type font, and that's indicative of a theological or apologetic explanation of the faith. Start with the New Testament Catechism. You can't go wrong. Then I would recommend starting with basic books on apologetics that just cover a wide variety of topics at a introductory level. So not to have a shameless plug here, but my book, Why We're Catholic, would be a good place to start. I also recommend Jimmy's book, A Daily Defense. What's great about Jimmy's book is each day you get a little apologetic nugget or piece of wisdom, and it's one page long. It'll take you 5 minutes to read it. So starting with these introductory works like Why We're Catholic or A Daily Defense would be wonderful. And the goal is to start is to just accumulate knowledge little by little, little by little. So as you're doing this kind of shallow growth in a lot of different areas, one thing you can do next is that if there's a topic that fascinates you, take some other spare time like a Saturday afternoon or an evening and find a book just on this one narrow topic and just explore it, you know, whether it's something related to Catholic apologetics like the Eucharist, finding just a book on the Eucharist and reading it and just enjoying that and not worrying about all the, don't worry about, as you're reading about the faith, don't worry about the things you're not reading. You know, we get overwhelmed like there's so much for me, there's so much for me to learn. What am I going to do? Well, you're learning right now. You can only learn one thing at a time and just enjoy and relish it and offer it up as a prayer. You know, in your prayer, say, Lord, I thank you for the gifts of the truths and revelations you've given us in the faith, and I just humbly pray that you'll help me to better understand it and help me to just delight in the wonderful things that you've given us in our faith to learn about and just delight in that in your studies to grow deeper in knowledge. And then as you've grown in that, take that in conversations with people. And don't worry about winning arguments. Just in your conversations, learn a lot and ask other people, hey, what do you think about this? Maybe it's women priests. Maybe it's the existence of God or the Bible. Whatever it might be, what do you think about this? And then you might be able to offer them something you've learned to correct a misunderstanding. Or if they bring up something you've never heard before, or you don't know how to answer, you can say, that's a good point. That's a good question. I want to go look that up and I'll get back to you. And then you've got something else new to learn. And to treat our engagements with other people not as boxing matches, not as intellectual fights, it's just ways to share our faith. And then to learn from other people, this is what they want to learn about. I got to grow in that area. Okay, I'm going to grow there. Another resource I would recommend, Basil, would be on our website at Catholic.com. If you even just search for this in Google, you'll find it. It's called the Ultimate Apologist Reading List. I wrote this a few years ago, about 2 years ago, actually. And it's just, it's not exhaustive, but it's a list of books that I have found helpful in different subjects. And I've organized them, and next to the book, I've put a B for beginner, I for intermediate, A for advanced. So on these topics, if there's a topic you really like, read a beginning book or booklet about it, then maybe get an intermediate or advanced. And so that article is called The Ultimate Apologist's Reading List. And that might be helpful for you just to start. So gave a lot out there for you, but is that kind of a helpful plan to grow in these different areas?
Very helpful. I'll start reading tonight. Thank you.
Wonderful.
I'm sorry I forgot how to pronounce your name, Basil. I do really apologize. But I forget everything, though, so that you can have that. And I do hope you appreciate that sage advice from Trent Horn. We go now to, oh, you know what? Why are you looking at me like that?
No, you're... I was trying to think of some other spice.
Some joke you could make with turmeric.
But I'm just hopeless when it comes to spices. My wife sent me to the store to just get one certain spice. I'm like, oh, yeah, this should be easy. And then I just stand there paralyzed in fear looking at all of these spice canisters.
I know what you're talking about.
I was just like, I thought there was just salt and pepper.
Wait till you,
maybe garlic if you're going to go crazy one day.
No, but and then I'm sorry, but I'm old. That's small print. So I got to walk up to every single one of them. Look at it and say, is this the one she sent me for?
Right.
And apparently there's something called coconut extract. Did you know that?
I did not know that you could extract that much from a coconut. I thought it was mostly milk, but what do I know?
What do you know?
What do I know?
I said that we'd go back and check on Matt in Bowling Green, Ohio. Matt, are you there now? Matt is still not there. That's a mystery. Sorry, Matt. We'll wake you up later and get you on. Let's go to Dan in Pensacola, Florida, listening on 103.3 FM. Dan, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. You are on with Trent Horn. Your question, please.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Can you guys hear me?
We can, yes. Are you falling downstairs?
Yeah, I have a family member. Oh. I can hear you. I'm in the car and there's a little bit of rain.
Oh, I got you. Oh, I got you.
I have pulled over to the side.
Good.
I have a family member who's an atheist. And I sometimes try to evangelize, when the time it feels right at the appropriate time. But he regularly brings up a wedge issue, which is the prohibition against married priests. And the reason I talk about that as a wedge issue, because that, for me, it's a teaching where, for me, despite, prayer and research and really trying to agree with the current teachings, I still just, I'm not 100% on board with the current teachings personally. I'm totally willing to keep praying and changing. I'm absolutely willing to change my mind, but kind of when he brings it up, it's one where I feel like I'm undermining my own commitment to the church or my own, commitment to evangelization, because I kind of always left thinking, you've got a really good point. I kind of agree with you. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I think, Dan, you don't necessarily have to let this be an insurmountable obstacle in sharing the faith with your atheist friend. You can even use it as an example of the faith you have in the church, that you can say to him, look, there are some teachings that the church gives that people have difficulties with. And you know what? I just want to be honest with you. I'm not somebody who's trying to sell a belief system to you. I meant to bring this up a little bit earlier, Cy, when people talk about being an apologist, because the term apologist is sort of pejorative in common parlance, common discourse. Like an apologist for a political party, for example.
Oh, right. I see.
An apologist is treated as somebody who just spins every answer, and they're trying to sell you on something. They whitewash the truth. They're not entirely honest. They're just out to win arguments. And so it can be helpful for you to say, look, there are things that I struggle with, things I don't entirely understand. But that difficulty in and of itself doesn't outweigh the faith I do have in the things I don't struggle with, like that God exists, Jesus rose from the dead, Jesus gave us the Catholic Church. And so if all of that is true, then there are maybe these other teachings that I struggle with a little bit. Well, I just have to offer up my limited human understanding and just understand that as a human being, I may not fully understand everything. It's a kind of humble appreciation of the limits of my knowledge, because many atheists accuse us of not being humble, like we just know everything about the world. Then no, you can use this as an opportunity with them to say that I have limits of my knowledge, but these areas where I'm challenged don't overturn the areas where I have faith in the church, and it doesn't negate that there's a God, that his son died for my sins, rose from the dead, and that he gave us this church. So that might be helpful in your conversation with him, that it doesn't actually count against that. We have to go to a break here, Dan, but I am hoping if you could stay on the line. I know it's not entirely on our forecast for the show today. I wouldn't mind talking about celibacy with you if you have a minute. Would you like to do that?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'd be more than happy to.
Yeah, let's do that when we come back.
Dan, we will be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I had to go through fear, and thank God that I overcame the fear, and I just left it up to God, and now there's no more fear, there's just acceptance, and I'm just learning to listen. If you want to be closer to God, you just need to keep following His rules, and your application, your radio station, has helped me to always be positive and continue to listen to the rules and obey.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic. Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We are talking with sage and seasoned apologist Trent Horn today about, getting some practical tips on apologetics. You were going to talk with Dan a little bit about celibacy when we came back.
Yeah, so I hope Dan is still there. I mean, he's not on the...
Are you with us, Dan?
Still here.
Okay, good. Yeah, you just weren't on my call screen. Dan was talking to us a little bit about evangelizing an atheist friend and noting, well, what about when my friend brings up a church teaching that I have trouble with accepting? And that can actually, I think, be used to show the honesty we have and the humility that we're not out to whitewash anything or to be dishonest or disingenuous, but that if Dan is able to overcome any things that he have doubts or difficulties with, that he's convinced by the truth of the faith, perhaps his atheist friend could do the same, that he should not refuse, because I think some people do this, Si, that they won't choose to believe in the church, to become Catholic, or to return to the faith unless every single one of their doubts and difficulties has been resolved to complete and utter satisfaction.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, well, why not overcome these big hurdles and be convinced, and then any other difficulties or you know, things that are hard to grapple with, let's grapple with those down the road if they don't neglect the major core teachings of the faith that we do accept. And what's interesting, Dan, is the issue you brought up, it's not a dogma of the faith. It's not a dogmatic teaching, clerical celibacy. Celibacy is a discipline of the teaching of the church, and it has changed, and the church has the authority both to implement it, change it, or abolish it. So I'm curious, what is the struggle you kind of have with the teaching on celibacy? And also let me add the qualifier. The teaching on celibacy most people are familiar with are in the Latin or Western Church that requires priests to be celibate. In the Eastern Catholic Church, priests can be married. However, only unmarried priests can rise to the level of being a bishop. So the clerical celibacy is something that's unique to the Latin or Western Church. So what are kind of the difficulties that you have?
Well, it's kind of how you described it before. The church seems to have changed, not necessarily changed, but it's the teachings on what priests can and can't do seems to have evolved.
Yeah.
And then it seems to, when I'm talking with somebody, it seems like, well, you know, if St. Peter was, you know, married, then how come a priest now? Why would we turn someone down from becoming a priest if he decides that he wants to be married as well? I don't know. It feels like, to me, the church might be turning away a lot of people who would be very, very effective priests. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I kind of struggle with it. That's kind of my biggest concern. I feel we might be turning away so many very outstanding priests. Also, I have a lot of experience with just members of Eastern Orthodox, and they have married. And my wife was at one point a Lutheran, and mm-hmm. so I can see the value of having the kind of the, not priests, but priestly figures who are married and how they can help, you know, married couples and all those types of things. So,
sure. And Dan, I see that. And the fact that priests in the Latin Rite of the Church practice celibacy and they're not married does not say that those priests in the Eastern Church, for example, that there's something wrong with them because they are married. Rather, in choosing different paths, whether a priest is married or unmarried, I think there are different goods that can be celebrated in that. And so a married priest can celebrate the joy of family life and be a witness to others of how one can bring family life within the priestly vocation and how his spiritual fatherhood parallels actual fatherhood. But you're correct that, you know, there are goods associated with a married priesthood. There's also, however, goods associated with a celibate priesthood, that this is not something that was simply invented. A lot of people will say that a celibate priesthood was basically invented in the Middle Ages to deal with priests, you know, not the church not having to support priests and inheritance rights for children about church property and things like that. And that's not the case. We can find from early church councils and regional councils affirming priestly celibacy. It's true that Scripture talks about St. Peter. Well, it talks about him having a mother-in-law. But what's curious about Scripture, actually, is it doesn't mention Peter's wife explicitly. St. Paul talks about how Peter and other apostles had sister wives, but these may have been more like Christian helpmates, not actually literal wives. It doesn't use the word wife. I believe that's in 1 Corinthians 9, where it talks about this with Peter. But we don't have an explicit reference to Peter's wife. It's possible she may have been deceased by the time Peter began his apostolic work. But I would counter that from Scripture to say, well, look at what St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. In 1 Corinthians 7, St. Paul talks about how he wishes that everyone could be unmarried like him because he has a tremendous amount of freedom to be able to serve God. He says in 1 Corinthians 7 that the married man is anxious to please his wife, whereas the unmarried man is anxious to please the Lord. And I mean, I've known this in my own personal life, that prior to being married, I had a ton of free time. And I squandered a lot of it playing Halo, but I also had a lot of free time to be able to go to daily mass, to do all kinds of different things, to serve, volunteer, pray. But when you become married, especially when you have children, your free time becomes an endangered species because your time is devoted to serving your family. So priests can, who are unmarried can find themselves better be able to serve the people of God, to have more practical time to do that. They also serve, and I think this is important, Dan, that really shows a beauty of the celibate priest, is that he reclaims the goodness of our sexuality and the goodness of our virginity in an age that treats the idea of not having sex like some kind of disease. That it's like, if you aren't having sex, you know, there's something wrong with you, or there's something that's going to be dysfunctional about you, that if you go your whole life without having sex, you're going to explode in some kind of repressive fit of rage or something. But the celibate priest living a holy life serving others, that the reason he wears black, or at least diocesan or secular, in the sense they serve a diocese, not a religious order, diocesan priests wear black, is symbolic to show they are dead to the world. They don't live according to the world's standards. They live according to the standard of Christ, the standards, you know, St. Paul gives us in 1 Corinthians 7, to fully give themselves to serving God, to that the priest, when he stands in the person of Christ, that literally he is in persona Christi when he consecrates the Eucharist, when he hears our sins in confession, that by being unmarried, he goes even a step further to imitate Christ because he stands as the spouse of the church. That just as Scripture says that the church is the bride of Christ, if the priest stands in the person of Christ, he can more fully enter into that role that the only bride he has is the church that he serves. And so I think there's a lot there. And if you check in the catechism on clerical celibacy, you'll see these different reasons. So I think I would look at it this way. For you, as you grapple with this, there are goods of married priests. But ask yourself, are there also goods, wonderful goods of celibate priests? And should we celebrate those? And do they serve a good purpose? And that can help you see the sensibility behind this particular discipline that the church teaches. I think there's also a book, I forget who the author is, but it's called The Apostolic Origins of Clerical Celibacy. You might also want to check that out as well. So that's just a little bit on there, but is that kind of a helpful start?
It is a helpful start. I don't want to eat up all your time, but maybe I don't understand the actual dynamics of married and unmarried priests well enough. If somebody wants to be a priest in the Roman Catholic Church, is there an option for a married man to do that? Or
the only option would be if that man were already a priest in an Eastern church, whether it was in – if you were a married priest in a – church that either shares holy orders, or this has even actually been allowed with Anglican priests, that if you're an Eastern Orthodox priest, for example, and you have a family, you can enter into the Catholic Church, into the Western Rite, the Latin Rite, and remain a priest, and of course still remain married and be a married priest. So those exceptions are allowed in certain cases among priests who are converts, both in the Eastern Orthodox and in the Anglican Church. Father Dwight Longnecker would be an example of that. He's hopefully Father Dwight will, I'm not going to get this wrong, I believe he is a married Anglican priest who was then later received into the Catholic Church. So there are exceptions there. But otherwise, I'd recommend check out the Catechism on Priestly Celibacy. And two books that I think would be helpful are The Apostolic Origins of Priestly Celibacy by Christian Cocchini. He's a Jesuit priest. And the other would be The Case for Clerical Celibacy by Alphonse Maria Cardinal Stickler. So The Case for Clerical Celibacy and The Apostolic Origins of Clerical Celibacy, both published by Ignatius Press, I think would be very helpful for you.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks very much. Just real quick, Trent, I want to remind people you have your brand new podcast.
Yes.
That's exciting lots of people. You can go to Trent Horde Podcast and find out all the cool stuff you're doing.
Yeah, so it's the Council of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L. Every week we take on a different subject, and I walk people through kind of a mini lesson in understanding how to explain and defend the faith, and taking on all wide variety of topics. I just recorded one on how to answer Jesus skeptics. I did one on difficult questions about married sexual morality.
I heard that got a little explicit.
It did. It was. I approached it in a very frank way, an honest way, because a lot of people have these questions, but they're too embarrassed to ask, and they're important. People get very nervous and anxious about them, so I wanted to set the record straight. And I've done other podcasts on purgatory, on the Bible, on the sexual abuse scandal in the church, like what happened after with the allegations arising about Cardinal McCarrick. So that's Council of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L. Check it out on iTunes and Google Play. And if you become a premium subscriber at TrentHornPodcast.com, you can listen to podcasts for only premium members. You can submit questions I will answer in future podcasts, have live video chat sessions with me, get free book, and the T-shirt with the cartoon version of me, which unfortunately just looks like a drawing of me, which is always unfortunate if a cartoon version of you just kind of looks like you. It makes you seem like you are a cartoony somewhat yourself. But yes, check out TrenthornPodcast.com to get all those extras when it comes to the podcast.
I think the cartoon you might be handsomer than the real you. I'm not sure.
That's a possibility.
Marie, I need a verdict on this. Who's handsomer, the cartoon or the real?
It looks like the real version wins out. So
good.
That's one vote. We'll have to go on the podcast. I can make that a poll for my premium subscribers to see if they're on Team Psy with Cartoon Trent or Team Trent with Real Trent.
Well, I sit and talk with Cartoon Trent when you're not around. So the two of us have, because I have the T-shirt. So we just visit.
You might want to. I'll email Father Hugh. Maybe you two should have a little sit down about that. So. Inordinate attachments to inanimate objects.
Why do we have a Father Hugh T-shirt that I can talk to? Is that what you were suggesting?
Might need to make that two or three sessions.
Trent Horn. Hey, the Case Against Contraception, Trent's DVD, is out now. You can get it at shop.catholic.com and free shipping all weekend on that. You proud of it, Trent?
I am. I think with all the talk about Humana Vitae, you get the logical, theological, social, medical evidence against contraception and why the church's teaching makes sense.
Again, thank you very much, Trent.
Thank you, Cy, the best host we have right now.
We have at this moment. See you tomorrow for 2 hours of open forum, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.